And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, In His Father's House, was written by Mark Siegel.
At the heart of the American dream, there is a myth. It is the myth of the poor boy whose perseverance propels him forward on the spectacular road from rags to riches. At the heart of the Jewish dream, there is the belief that learning is wealth, that learning is the greatest treasure a man may own. This is the story of a man who combined these dreams in a life of unique service. His name was Maxwell Abell, and his goodness of heart became a legend in his own lifetime. It is a year since Maxwell Abell left us, but the facets of the legend which he lived remain bright, sparkling in the lives of countless Jewish scholars, of widows, orphans, teachers, of all his countrymen affected, lifted by his deeds. And the seeds of the legend that Maxwell Abell lived were planted in his father's house. The story begins in Chelsea, a neighborhood of Boston, bounded on all sides in the years that Maxwell Abell was growing up by poverty. On a cold winter afternoon in 1914, Moshe Eliyahu Abell returned from the synagogue where he had attended services and wearily opened the door of the three-room apartment in which he, his wife Frida, and their four children lived.
Frida? You here, Frida?
Ma went across the street, Pa, to Mrs. Levy's. She's sick.
She's been there long?
Since after school, Pa. Since I came home.
You've been here since 3 o'clock, Max. You didn't go to the Talmud Torah.
Look, Pa, Mama told me to stay here and take care of Jean and Joey.
That's twice this week you didn't go to the Talmud Torah.
Mrs. Levy's a very sick woman, Pa.
I know. If you don't go to the Hebrew school, you're going to be a very ignorant man.
Pa, I'm telling you, Mama said...
I know. But you think I want Mama to help Mrs. Levy? To help a sick person is a duty. But to study is also a duty. What are you holding behind your back?
It's a book. Horatio Alger. And the man who wrote it, he grew up right here in Chelsea.
Max, just because a man grows up in Chelsea doesn't make him a wise man. What's so wonderful in these books? You have to be reading them every minute.
They're about boys who are poor, who don't have anything to eat practically.
You have to read about such boys?
They work hard and they get good jobs. Then something happens and they get rich. So rich, Pa, they don't have to go looking for wood for the stove. And they can buy new clothes. And they can...
All right, that's enough.
I'm sorry, Pa. You asked me.
Max, come here. Listen to me.
Okay, Pa.
To be rich, to be poor, that's not the important thing.
It's not?
No, it's not. A man can live a life of goodness in wealth. A man can live a life of goodness in poverty. The important thing, Max, is that he should have a heart of goodness. You understand?
I think so, Pa.
Aye. So, maybe now until Mama comes home, you should go out and find some wood. It's cold in the kitchen. We could use a little wood in the stove.
Can a man ever know when he has really conveyed a lesson to his son? All that Moshe Eliyahu Abel, a preacher and a student, an impractical and pious man, knew was that when he opened the door to the tiny cold water flat in which his family lived, two worlds came face to face. And he also knew that if he could not bequeath wealth to his son, he could bequeath to him a love of goodness and of learning, an understanding heart.
Here I am.
Marcella?
Yes, Frida?
Marcella, I've been thinking. We should buy Max a suit. A real suit. With a jacket and a vest.
What? With a jacket and a vest?
A new suit, Marcella.
A new suit? Chelsea's full of perfectly good old clothes. Why does he have to have a new suit?
He's never had a new suit, Marcella.
Well, if he's never had a new suit, why does he have to have now? After all, Freda, what is a new suit? A vanity, a necessary adornment.
For his bar mitzvah, Marcella.
Oh, for his bar mitzvah. Well, why didn't you say so? Of course he should have a new suit for his bar mitzvah. There's only one little question, Freda.
Isn't there always that little question?
You'll have to ask it, Frida. Where will he get the money for a new suit for Max?
The money? I'll ask Max. He'll figure out where we get the money.
Maxwell Abel wore the first new suit he ever owned for his bar mitzvah. A suit bought from nickels and dimes saved from his older sister's meager wages in a Boston shoe factory. From rent paid by boarders who lived in one of the three rooms of the Abel's flat. But mostly from pennies earned by his own work as an errand and delivery boy. At 12, he was the man of affairs of the family, who could be counted on to fight the day-by-day battle for food, for clothing, for wood, to keep the family warm. It was the discharge of these responsibilities that almost prevented Maxwell Abel from ever wearing his new suit at all.
Mrs. Abel! Mrs. Abel!
Who's there? What is it?
It's Patrolman O'Reilly, Mrs. Abel. Now, would you have the kindness to open the door?
Max, what happened?
It's nothing, Ma. I'm all right, honest.
What is it? What happened?
By the grace of God, your boy's right, Mrs. Abel. Nothing happened. They've had a look at him at the hospital.
The hospital?
Sit down, Ma. I'm telling you, I'm all right.
Please, Mr. Policeman, what happened?
Well, he was picking scraps of wood from that new house they're building down the street, and he fell. But there's no bones broken, praise the Lord. The hospital says to put him to bed for a day or so, and he'll be good as new.
He's not hurt. You're sure?
Sure, and I'm sure, Mrs. Abel. And it's a miracle at that. It was from the third floor he fell, Mrs. Abel.
Now, Max, you promise me.
I'll promise I won't climb up buildings, Ma, but someone's got to get the wood. Ma, couldn't Pa get a job like Mr. Levy? Couldn't he do something besides reading all day and giving Hebrew lessons?
Max, as long as I live, I never want to hear you say anything like that again.
I'm sorry, Ma, only...
Your father is a wonderful man. He may not make a living, but he's a good, kind, wonderful man, a saintly man. And when you're older, you'll realize how lucky you are to have such a father.
I will, Ma?
Yes, you will. You'll understand that everything he does for you.
For me, Ma?
For you, Max. And for all the children. Everything he does. Papa wants to influence you most by being himself. He studies because he wants you to study. He teaches others the meaning of Torah because he wants you to love Torah.
There were other fires that burned in the Abel household besides the fire that burned in the kitchen stove. The fire of faith cast a gentle and holy light on the Sabbath evening table. And the fire of learning could never be extinguished in the home of Moshe Eliyahu Abel.
Max, I have a present for you.
A present, Pa? My birthday isn't until next month.
This is a present that'll last for many birthdays. Here, open it up.
It's a book. No, two. Three. Gosh, Pa, three books.
Three wonderful books, Max. The Life of Maimonides, a book of Jewish legends, and a book of commentaries on the Bible.
Gosh, Pa, thanks. Pa, how'd you buy them?
Oh, it matters.
I mean, I noticed you came home without your overcoat this afternoon. You didn't...
Please, Max. Don't mention about the overcoat. Maybe Mama wouldn't understand.
But, Pa, your overcoat!
Listen, Max. An overcoat wears out, yes? Three books like this last a long time. As long as you live. Also, the man who sold me the books is a very poor man. He can certainly use an overcoat.
In February of 1915, Maxwell Abel celebrated his bar mitzvah and declared in two speeches, one in English, one in Yiddish, that he had reached the state of manhood. A few days later, he asserted the power of his newly won status.
Ma, Pa, I got it!
Quiet, Max. Your father's studying.
It's all right, Frida. You got what, Max?
The license, Pa. The working papers. I can sell newspapers now. You have to be 13, Pa, and I got it.
To get a license to sell newspapers, you have to be bar mitzvah?
Well, not exactly,
That's Pa. Wonderful, Max. You should use your license in good health.
Thanks, Ma.
And when will you sell these newspapers, Max?
Early in the morning, Pa, and on Sundays. It means I don't have to work in the factory, Pa. I can go on studying.
You can go on studying. Wonderful. I'll call the rabbi right away.
The rabbi?
So you can start to study Talmud.
Moishele, he doesn't want to study only Talmud.
Well, he just said he wants to go on studying.
I do, Pa, but I don't want to become a rabbi.
So you won't become a rabbi. You can still study Talmud.
But, Pa, I want to go to regular high school. And then...
And then what?
Then I want to go to Harvard. Oh, I know it sounds crazy, Pa, but I can do it. Miss Prescott says I can do it.
Frida, well, what is he talking about?
He's talking about what Miss Prescott says, his teacher.
Miss Prescott, Pa, she's descended from General Prescott, the one who commanded the troops at Bunker Hill.
Oh, and she thinks you should go to high school, a regular high school. She's an authority.
And then to Harvard, Pa.
Max, I am also descended from someone.
I don't understand, Pa.
I'm descended from Moses, who stood on a much bigger hill than Bunker Hill, on Mount Sinai, and received the Torah from the Almighty. Maybe that makes me an authority, too. Well, you'll do what you want to do. To study anything is better than not to study anything at all. I won't stop you. But
what, Pa?
You couldn't consider me as good an authority as Miss Prescott. Think it over. Maybe you'll still go to the yeshiva.
But I've thought it over, Pa.
All right. It's a funny place, this America.
What do you mean, Pa?
A funny place. In America. Only in America. General Prescott knows more than Moses.
It's a funny place, America. A funny place in which a child of immigrant parents, fired by ambition, spurred on by the dream, can work 10 hours a day delivering newspapers, supporting himself and his family. A funny place, America, in which a newsboy can bank $1,000 by the time he graduates from high school, win a scholarship, and sit in the ivy-covered lecture halls of Harvard University next to the sons of the wealthy and long secure. In which a Harvard student works as a waiter, a tutor, a football usher, to acquire an education which his father, an impractical man but a man of wisdom, can see only as incomplete. It's a very funny place, America.
Pa, you still wish I'd studied to be a rabbi, don't you?
Well, if you're asking, yes.
Pa, I just wasn't cut out to be a rabbi.
I'm not saying you were.
Well, then what are you saying? It's as if you didn't want me to be a success. It's as if working in a bank or a business is a disgrace.
Oh, no, No one said it was a disgrace, Max. Far from it. But maybe... maybe you don't know what success in life really is.
Pa, I don't want to be mean, but...
I know. But I'm not someone you think is qualified to know what is success. All right? Maybe it seems so. But maybe success isn't being famous or making money. Maybe success is who's first in the service of God. Who's first in helping others.
Pa, you make it sound as if all I want to do is make money. I don't want to make money. I want to make good.
I hope you do, Max. I think you will. But to make good, really to make good, I mean to create good, it's not money in the bank it takes. Just a little wisdom in the spirit, in the soul. That's what it takes. I'm not so sure you'll find this wisdom in those books on economics. You know, sometimes I think those books you're studying were written by that...
That who, Pa?
Well, that man who lived here in Chelsea. That Horatio Alger.
In the winter of 1921, while Maxwell Abell continued to work his way through Harvard, the Abell family moved to Chicago, joining Maxwell's older married sister, Rose. And it was in Chicago, after he had graduated from Harvard magna cum laude, having been admitted to Phi Beta Kappa and completing the four-year course in 3 years, that he met and promptly fell in love with Fanny Edelman. In the spring of that year of 1923, they walked hand in hand along the shores of Lake Michigan, drinking in the world around them through young eyes, getting to know each other.
Max, look at that beautiful sailboat.
That's a pretty one, all right. When I was a kid, I used to watch them on the Charles River. I used to say to myself, sometime I'm going to have a boat like that.
Max, every time you talk about Boston, you tell me about something else you promised yourself you were going to have.
Well, I guess that's because there were a lot of things I didn't have.
And now, Max?
You want an honest answer, Fran?
Of course.
Well, to be honest, when that sailboat went by just now, what I said to myself was, who needs a sailboat? Who needs anything when he has love in his heart?
Sometimes it seemed to Fanny Edelman that, in certain ways, she was older than the intense young man whom she had come to love. And from the beginning, she was what she would be throughout Maxwell Abell's life. The sensitive sounding board on which he would try the emerging insights of his own experience.
About that sailboat, Fan. I want to talk to you about that sailboat.
In so serious a tone, Max.
Well, it's not just about the sailboat.
Then what is it about, darling?
What people want and how they go about getting it. Once I wanted a sailboat. Now I don't want a sailboat. It's a very important fact.
It is.
I think it is. Suppose a man spent his whole life trying to own a sailboat and then found out that wasn't what he wanted at all.
Oh, you mean a sailboat named Success, Max?
Yes. I think that's just what I mean, Fan.
Wouldn't it depend on how the man used the sailboat once he had it? Wouldn't that really be the important thing?
In the late spring of that year of 1923, Maxwell Abell announced to his parents that he planned to be married. His father listened quietly. And after the congratulations had been offered and the wishes for good luck expressed, Moshe Eliyahu Abell took his son aside.
A long time I haven't talked to you, Max.
I know, Pa. It's been a busy time.
So, let me say something now. Something I have learned.
Sure, Pa.
You know, sometimes a son, it seems to his father, he's running away. The father has one way, and the son has another way. You understand?
Of course, Pa.
So now, you're going ready to leave. To make your own house. I want to thank you for Mama and me. You've been a good boy.
Please, Papa.
No. Let me finish. And what I have learned, maybe someday you will learn it too. That is, sometimes, when a son runs away from his father, if he runs far enough, he comes to the same place. Maybe he has a different way of doing what he believes. But finally, he believes what his father believes. So, run away, Max. Run. It's all right. And may your life be a blessing.
Fanny Edelman and Max were married on August 21st, 1923. It was a simple wedding. When it was over, Maxwell Abell, his total capital of $100 in his pocket, boarded a coach train to sit up all night with his new wife on the way to the Wisconsin Dells. He was 21 years old, and his life, as it would many times again, was just beginning.
Max.
Yes, darling?
Oh, it's so right to be on a train right after you're married. It's...
the beginning of a journey? Yes, darling. I hope a long and beautiful journey.
Max, You look as if you were a million miles away.
No. I've just been thinking, darling.
About what, Max?
Something Pa said when I told him we were going to get married. He was trying to tell me that values are like a circle. That really I was very much like him.
You are, darling. Much more than you know.
I've been thinking about it, though. And I've realized something very strange. All of my life, until I met you, I think, Fan. All of my life, I've concentrated on what I didn't have as a child.
I know, Max.
And now suddenly, now that I'm beginning to think that someday we'll have children, you and I, now suddenly I find myself thinking of how much I've had. How rich Pa and Ma were that they could give so much away.
You will do the same, Max. You will see.
I hope so, Fan. Maybe not in the same way, but I hope so. Fan, could it be that their lives are so rich because they gave so much to others?
This was Maxwell Abell. He would go on to achieve material success beyond his wildest dreams. But he would go on also to the use of that success to create a unique fusion of the American dream of achievement and the Jewish dream of learning. He would serve as president of the United Synagogue of America and as chairman of President Eisenhower's Committee on Government Employment Policy. He would help redeem the land of Israel through his service in the Jewish National Fund and would help build Torah in America as a director of the Jewish Theological Seminary. The list continues for pages, but more than all this was his achievement as a man, for he joined the great traditions of two heritages in his striving for a heart of goodness.
I have found happiness only in making others happy. I have found wisdom only in helping others to gain wisdom. I should despair unless I believe to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living.
Each day of his life, Maxwell Abell witnessed the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. For his goodness of heart was a legend in his own lifetime. It is a legend of fire with life, as the man who lived it was a fire with life. By precept and example, he lights the way for others, even as by precept and example, the seeds of his greatness were planted in his father's house.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Maxwell Rabb, who has just completed serving as Secretary to President Eisenhower's cabinet, the first man in American history to hold this post. Mr. Rabb.
Last year, Maxwell Abell, one of the great exemplars of American democracy and a moving spirit among his own people, passed to his eternal reward. It was a day of great sadness, and this loss has remained with us as we today observe the first anniversary of his death. The portrayal we have just heard about the early life of Maxwell Abell describes the seed of the man to come, and the maturing of his life thereafter revealed a man possessed of an inner strength, a fierce anger towards injustice in any form, a consuming appreciation of his responsibilities, and a forthright and driving dedication to achieve good. Yet withal, he had a gentleness and warmth, a humility and kindness, and an abiding, deep-seated love of his wife and family. For in him, in his practical everyday acts, was a blending of the American and the Jewish traditions. It is no wonder that a man of his background and human intensity rose in a brief time to the stature of chairman of the President's Committee on Government Employment Policy, so that, in appraising his work, the President of the United States recorded for posterity, on behalf of the whole country, these words which were read at Maxwell Abell's funeral, and I quote, "In addition to Mr. Abell's outstanding business and philanthropic achievements, he was above all a fine American citizen. Personally, I have been particularly appreciative of his work as chairman of the President's Committee on Government Employment Policy. He will be greatly missed." But the true fulfillment of the American political and social compact came in the religious and spiritual life which Maxwell Abell led and taught to his family and friends. Legion were his good works, and the basic symbol of his hopes and his work was the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. As we spend these moments in tribute to Maxwell Abell, thinking of the profound impact he has on our own lives, I think we should remember his own words. And he said, "There should arise a generation of Jews in America who feel at home in the writings of the prophets and in the ethics of the fathers, and whose conversation, public statements, and public acts will be buttressed and enriched by the wisdom and inspiration of the five books of Moses." Yes, Maxwell Abell left us a legacy of understanding, a legacy which he himself inherited from his Jewish tradition and from the America he loved. This we remember. With this inspiration, we live.
Thank you, Mr. Rabb. Our Eternal Light drama today, In His Father's House, was written by Mark Siegel and edited by Dr. Moshe Davis. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Ludwig Donath, Leon Janney, Ronnie Gates, Frieda Altman, Joseph Boland, Fran Spanier. The narrator was Norman Rose. This is Mel Brandt. Our program was directed by George Voutsos. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.